Hello, and welcome to the Brandon Good Podcast. I'm Jennifer Roach, Director of Crisis Communications and Reputation Management for Brannigan. While normally our podcast strives to provide a fun, behind-the-scenes look into the world of communications, in today's episode, we are focusing on a much more serious and unfortunately timely topic of school shootings in America. Our guest today is Ty Breitlow, District Administrator for the Lomira, Wisconsin Public Schools. Few school administrators have Ty's unique perspective on school safety. I hope you enjoy the episode. Between the 1999 attack at Columbine High School and the tragedy at Robb Elementary in Uvalde this past May, there have been a total of 338 shootings at K-12 schools in the United States. According to data from the Washington Post, 185 people were killed and 373 injured in those shootings. But perhaps even more shocking is that in 2022, more than 35,000 students experienced gun violence while at school. I'm Jennifer Roach, Director of Crisis Communications and Reputation Management for Brannigan. With numbers like these, I think it's fair to say that every parent and school district administrator in our country is concerned about the safety and security of their students and staff, but very few have the personal experience of Ty Breitlow, District Administrator for the Lomira, Wisconsin Public School District, who is our guest today. Ty, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
If it's okay with you, I'm just going to jump right in. Could you tell our listeners why you have a bullet-resistant vest in your office?
Sure. So I think preparedness is key, but I have a significant past experience. December 1st, 1993, my father was the associate principal of Wauwatosa West High School, and a former student of his entered the building and shot him dead on the second floor. My brother was a freshman in high school. I was a seventh grader at Whitman Middle School across the street. And needless to say, that had a lasting traumatic impact on our entire family. And I think in the district, in the state, and even nationwide, I think the fact that Time Magazine came out then with an article about gun violence across the nation started the conversation for school safety. And then we had Columbine, and then it really did begin to ramp up. So while my father's incident was not of a mass shooting of sorts, whereas this was this person's intent, it provides a unique perspective with which to consider safety and preparedness in schools.
I'm so sorry for your loss. And as you've just said, I think it's important for us to put some context around this tragedy and point out that your father was killed 5.5 years before Columbine. And that was the event that really propelled the national awareness and created the conversation around the issues of school shootings and safety. So it's fair to say that when this occurred in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, it was absolutely shocking and really quite traumatizing to the community.
Without a doubt. The silver lining in all of that is the way in which the school community responded in terms of wrapping its arms around our entire family. The love and support and outpouring of each of those that we experienced really made me into the unique human being I am today, one that's dedicated to service and love of others.
Ty, you've had a really remarkable career in education, and I want to share a little more of your background with our listeners. Previously, you served as district administrator for the Randolph, Wisconsin School District, and prior to that, you were the director of learning and principal of the high school in Chilton, Wisconsin, where you received not one but two significant awards in 2019. First, you were named as a Herb Kohl Educational Foundation Principal Leadership Award recipient, and you were also named Wisconsin's 2019 High School Principal of the Year. You're obviously an exceptional educator, and I'm wondering how your father's death influenced your decision to pursue a career in education, and how it continues to inform the way that you approach school safety.
Yeah, thank you for that. I would say that first and foremost, in the aftermath, that tremendous outpouring of support really made me understand the critical nature of having a school community, the ways in which people all had eyes on me at all times, the teachers refusing to let me fail, all of those pieces really showed me that out of a traumatic experience, positives can come from that. And as I continued to develop into and have some career aspirations, I really recognized the importance of service to others. The support that I had, I wanted to pay forward to those that I serve now, in both students and staff inside of our schools. And so that's really been my why, for why I have pursued administration, and I believe had some success in it. It really is about engaging staff in the ways that make them feel safe and supported. And I think the research is abundantly clear that people don't take risks or learn without feeling safe. And so safety and preparedness is fundamental to that calling of service. So the second part of your question is, how has it continued to inform me? And I think that obviously that's the lens I begin with, but then thinking about the minutia and putting myself in the 13-year-old's shoes that was experiencing all of the trauma and the feelings and the numbingness of the emotions, and how as I grew and developed, I can understand that that might be what everyone is feeling in a crisis situation, and how can I best prepare them to respond to those moments. And so really it is just putting on a young adult's hat and thinking about every detail you possibly can from that perspective.
So I want to circle back to the why that you just talked about and just say that many of us realize that teachers today are being asked to do more and more, and many are burned out and leaving the field. I want to read you something that a former colleague said about you, and this is a quote. They said that you exemplify trust, support, honesty, and integrity with a sense of humor that brings levity to even the most stressful interactions. You lead with your heart, always keeping the needs of people you serve at the forefront of your decisions. That's very high praise. And I'm wondering, what are some of the things you do to motivate your team internally?
I think you have to help them to understand the why. Why are you initiating a change? Why are you working for preparedness for crisis situations? And really it is invoking an emotional response in people to do what is either a moral imperative or what is a needed change for those that we serve.
You recently took part in a nationwide survey of all public schools, which focused on what districts are doing to prevent school shootings and keep kids and staff safe. One of the key takeaways from that was that many districts acknowledge that they are falling short on safety, but that a lack of financial resources is to blame. How do you communicate the need for your community to support school safety measures?
I think it's important to provide context that these incidents, crises happen every day around our nation, and we are not so isolated that it cannot happen to us. And so we need to be prepared for every event as well as we possibly can be. So it really is a proactive approach.
I know that you've been able to implement some new safety initiatives in the Lomira District. Can you tell me about some of those?
Sure. So we have a crisis communication platform. It's called Crisis Go, but that allows us, meaning any school staff member, to initiate particular crises, and then those staff members will receive those real-time alerts. They'll be able to communicate with their managers. Managers can communicate directly with first responders. Not only that, there's many of our tools that, for example, our safety protocols are all included in the app. It allows us to account for all of our students within our school system. And one of the really great things is it speaks to our student information system. So even if a student changes teachers or changes classes or moves out of the district, that student will move to wherever they need to, even if that's out of the system. So real-time updates, again, direct communication with first responders is critical. As we know from other crises, cell phone towers get blocked up, communication gets halted, and we need to have a free flow of information. So that system allows us to do so. We've also utilized some of the Wisconsin Department of Justice grants to provide things like bulletproof glass on film, extra cameras, even some noise sensors. And so we felt like we've put ourselves in a position to be able to respond to anything that we need to. I would add that in talking with our school board and with our constituents, the taxpayers of the district have shown overwhelmingly that they support having a school resource officer in schools. And that speaks to the preparedness and the response side of any crisis event. But at the same time, that individual is building relationships with our students and families as well, which we know is a critical component. So multi-systems of support and utilizing whatever revenue streams we have to get to a place where we feel prepared to take on any challenge that comes our way.
Have you had to put your system into use?
Not at Lomira yet. We've only had some tests. So we onboarded it in October of this past year. So we're really just at the forefront of implementing it. But I am hoping the day does not come when we need to, obviously. Right.
What are the most important lessons that you've learned over time that you want people to know as they consider making these types of investments in school safety?
You can never be too prepared. And everything, I believe, is preventable. So much of being prepared is education, training, and then annually or even more so reviewing those drills and protocols. At the same time, I think there's a lot of upstream approaches that have yet to be implemented. I think everybody is aware of the mental illness that we have, specifically in our society, but more so in our youth, and what are some of the more proactive upstream approaches to, I would say, de-escalate the mental illness that is pervasive in our schools. And obviously pervasive because of the growth of social media and the role that plays in young people's lives these days. So I'm not sure I fully answered your question, but...
No, I think you did, and I actually want to touch on a couple of things you said. So I know that you're aware there was a study by the U.S. Secret Service that stated that the overwhelming majority of targeted school violence is preventable.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah.
My own experience shows that as well. The man who murdered my father, there was leakage. He made it known. He had written a plan down. He had spoken to people about those plans. He had done some direct things to our family. I do believe it's preventable.
When it comes to mental illness, do you think that social media has played a role in the increase in violence in schools?
Absolutely. You know, before social media, if you wanted to bully someone, you would probably have to do that either, you know, on a written piece of paper, which isn't available to everybody else in the school, or directly to them. And usually that happens in isolated incidents, not full student bodies. But in this day and age, the replicability of a chat or a screenshot allows whatever that bullying is to be broadcast. And then that exasperates that person's feeling of the bullying. And because so few people go to that person and say, hey, I disagree with what this person said to you or whatever, the person who has that occurring, the victim who has that occurring to them, doesn't understand that not everybody feels that way. In fact, it's just the opposite. Again, this is just my experience, my take from talking with children every day of my career, but that's my perspective.
Do you think social media has changed the role of educators?
Yes. Yes, we are far more into social emotional learning and have had to be more of a life coach than a curriculum content facilitator. So yes, absolutely the role has changed.
In general, when you look at education on a scale of 1 to 10, how prepared do you think schools are for safety threats?
I don't know that I could put a specific number on it. I can really only comment on the handful of schools that I have either worked in or toured in as part of my career. But I would just say we are not prepared. I mean, I would probably leave it at that. It is difficult to be prepared for everything, but there just isn't the sense of urgency and time and effort committed to being prepared.
To that end, you were recently featured in a national news story on school safety. How do media stories like these help you as an administrator to reinforce the need for additional resources for your schools?
One of the reasons that I replied to the survey is because I've had some frustration that more school district leaders aren't asked about how to better prepare their schools, their staffs, their children for these events. And moreover, school leaders do not receive formal training on any of these issues. So I think first and foremost, we need to make sure that we are directing the conversation and asking the people in the trenches, what do they need? What do they see? How can we help? And so my part in that was to draw awareness to the fact that we are underestimating the need and the way in which we engage our students, staff, and the larger stakeholder groups in proactive measure for safe and healthy environments. So really, a first piece of it is just awareness. And I think what's ultimately the frustrating piece is as violence increases, and in particular school violence increases, you don't see the sense of urgency rising from the public to match that. And so that for me has been a source of frustration. And this was my way of trying to draw more attention to that need.
So Ty, you've talked a lot about preparedness. Where do you start in trying to prepare your district for school safety violence?
I think the first thing you need to do is conduct an internal audit. So what systems do you have in place? And are those systems practical and feasible? And so, you know, the way the data you collect from that, I think, will guide your next steps. I think it's really important to engage the staff in terms of their comfort ability with either the protocols you have in place or the protocols that they don't know. And then it's simply just having engaging conversation about how best to approach whatever your data is showing, your growth areas. And so having concerted conversation around those topics with your staff and then taking action to satisfy those needs. So it's a hard reflection because you're going down a road of contrary to your belief of it could never happen here, it won't happen here, and you have to assume it will happen. And so when it does, how will we respond? And that's the critical question to gain all types of stakeholder feedback for. And people need to be sure to engage the first responders in that. One of the first things that I did as the new district administrator at the School District of Elmira was we had a tabletop exercise facilitated by our county emergency management director. And so we had all of our stakeholders around the table. We reviewed our evac routes. We reviewed our evac locations. We reviewed our reunification protocols. What's the fire department doing? What's the police department doing? What's EMS doing? Who is the communications point person? Who will direct the EMS and things like that? So just working through those scenarios on a grander scale, and then obviously breaking those out into the particular silos for when circumstances differ, you know, an active shooter versus a fire. And so that was a great step, and then that guided us to our areas of need and growth. And so then we had some conversation with our administrative team members, our staff members, and then we determined that the cell phones that we had given all of these staff members weren't a viable option for us. And then that led the conversation to how do we fill that gap. And so we've just kind of continued on that path and reviewed every one of our protocols, made them far more accessible for people so that they're not having to, oh, there's a crisis. What do I do? I got to go over and I got to grab this flip chart. I got to flip to the proper page. Instead, we try and remove the thinking from that, and it becomes what is a reaction, but it's a reaction that's a one that's been predetermined, right? So all they need to do is act, not a reaction, but just act. And that's critical because, as we've explored here today, it's about people get into flight or fight. And when your blood pressure rises, your thinking freezes. And we don't want that to occur because in these situations, seconds matter. Seconds save lives. And so, again, just to remove that, what is the ultimate human element out of it can save lives.
Well, Ty, thank you for this terrific conversation. It sounds like you have done an incredible job working with your team to keep the students and staff of Lomira School District safe. Thank you also to our listeners. You can subscribe to the Brannigan Podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. To stay up to date on future episodes or learn more about Brannigan, please visit us at BranniganInc.com. That's B as in boy, R-A-N-I-G-A-N-I-N-C.com.